America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Follow the bouncing military UN trucks in Virginia.
Sweetheart,
hello again. So what do you think I'm going to talk about? If you think you're going to hear the word Benghazi come out of your mouth, my mouth, you're right. I just said Benghazi, and that's the beginning and end of it. I will not talk about it. Trey Gowdy should be impeached for wasting my time. He promised us a lot. Remember Trey Gowdy. The great Tea Party, Trey Gowdy. Everyone loved him. Everyone loved Trey Gowdy. All the Schmendricks on the right. Oh, Trey Gowdy, the next president of the toilet bowl of America. He had a Benghazi hearing 3 months ago. It was an embarrassment. Hillary turned them into idiots. Trey Gowdy. Now here he is again now. $80 million later. What did he find out? What we knew already. What I wrote about in Government Zero, a whole chapter on which generals were ready to send aid and were told to stand down. It's all in Government Zero. So therefore, I'm not talking about it. Here's my exclusive today. The other day, the Daily Mail in the UK published an article with a picture of a UN, a military truck, a whole load of them. The white trucks equipped with large off-road tires were seen being transported on Interstate 81 on Friday. All of a sudden, the blogosphere went mad. UN trucks, what are they doing here? Is Obama about to declare martial law? Blah, blah, blah. Well, okay, so that was the story. So then, people went on to my Facebook page on it. We had 33,000, which is not huge, but it's okay. And people were saying that Obama, as you well know, because he is a mad dictator, he just hasn't gone to the full bore yet. The crazy man who thinks he's running the entire universe, they felt that this lunatic was going to unleash his mad dogs in the streets if Trump would win. And he might do it, by the way. As you well know, they're getting ready for civil disobedience because this is how the illegitimate left operates. Oh, they have nice shirts and ties, nice families, some of them. But they're criminals, every last one of them. And they conspire behind the scenes as criminals in the dark to do anything they have to stay in power. So people are saying, wait a minute. If Trump wins come November, this crazy man who hates Congress, hates the Supreme Court, has nothing but contempt for the American people, is liable to unleash the mad dogs of the left, as they did in Sacramento the other day, by the way. That's a secondary story. When the so-called anti-fascists, who were really the fascists, unleashed on American traditionalists. And, of course, the police today admitted in Sacramento, California, that the right-wingers committed no violence. It was all the vermin on the left, the anarchists, you know, the vermin. The vermin attacked them, and that's what Obama, they're afraid, is going to do after November, and then call out the UN to, quote, restore order. So that was the gossip on the blogosphere. You following me so far? Am I going too fast? Am I talking in New Yorkese? Should I slow it down and sound like a regular radio host from everywhere else in America who speaks in a slow, deliberate tone so that the new Americans can follow 1 out of 15 words and the older Americans who are on medication can follow 1 out of 10 words. But no, I'm excited, so I'll tell you the whole story in my own vernacular and my own speed. We did the research today. It's a Savage Nation exclusive. And to the best of our knowledge, there is no conspiracy for an act such as that, because what happened was, well, let me read you the whole story. It's a Savage Nation exclusive. It's not yet up anywhere. It should be on my Facebook by now, but the staff is busy making Kool-Aid somewhere in the back room. Here's the headline. Company that made armored vehicles seen in Virginia claims they're going overseas. Now, that's what we found out. Let me tell you the whole story if you don't know what I'm talking about. No, you're not going to hear anything about Benghazi in a video. I'll leave that to those who have no mind and no imagination to go on for 3 days now. Ooh, Hillary Clinton, no good. She lied about Benghazi. Ooh. They sound like stuck pigs. I can't listen to it anymore. You know nothing's going to come of it. Friday, Facebook user Jeff Stern uploaded images of heavy-duty military vehicles with the UN initials emblazoned on the side, fastened to tractor trailers heading down I-81 in Virginia, okay? If you want to see the picture, it's on the Facebook page. It should be up on my michaelsavage.com. Okay. So this caused a stir in many people in the social media community. It spurred journalists from several blogs and other outlets to look into the story. The vehicles were initially thought to be manufactured by Alpine Armoring in Herndon, Virginia. So my crackerjack team at the Savage Nation called the company this morning and were told that they had several inquiries about this story, but that they did not make the trucks. Okay, so that was the first red flag. So my guys asked if there was anyone to speak with in a position of authority, and they were told they could not speak about it because the trucks were not manufactured at that facility. They also said the UN does not operate in this country, and the trucks were most likely being shipped overseas. The person on the phone also told us there were several manufacturers in that area, and it could have been any one of those armorer companies. So we tried to find information on these and found there were not that many in the area that did this kind of work. Well, in researching the story further, a WND piece cited a comment over at the American Mirror, which stated that the BAE plant in York, Pennsylvania, may have manufactured these vehicles, and that they would also use the same highways to transport the vehicles in this manner. Have I lost you yet? Well, it's almost over. You can rest easy. The Savage Nation contacted the Media Relations Department at the BAE plant in York. Now listen carefully. And they said while they had received several inquiries, they did not manufacture the trucks and referred us back to Alpine Armoring. So now we're getting a runaround. You ready for this? We called Alpine back, and we spoke to someone in management who would not give his name. But while not specifically saying the trucks were manufactured there, he alluded to the fact that they were made there, and they were most definitely being shipped overseas for reasons only the United Nations knows. This man acknowledged getting many calls and reassured us that there is nothing ulterior in the works, right? And that the trucks in question are definitely going overseas. So the bottom line is, you don't know what I'm talking about. And therefore, I can easily talk about bad Chinese restaurants if you'd like, which I can tell you in great detail about from last night. The food was great, but I had to listen to liberals talk about Brexit to the point where okay, listen to me. I don't talk in public when I'm out. I don't say a word. I go to a little hole-in-the-wall Chinese outside of San Francisco where nobody knows me but the owner. She doesn't even know what I do for a living. It's amazing. I've eaten there for 10 years. She has no idea that I'm in the radio business, which is why I go there. My luck, there were two guys at a table adjacent to me, and they were loud as can be about Brexit, 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 and how the idiots in England didn't know what they were doing, and how they have to have another vote, and they have to do it again to make sure that they don't leave Europe. I said, oh, my God, I wanted to say something. You know how I correct my mind when this happens? I say to myself, Michael, you have an audience of millions with whom you can vent, who you can speak with. These losers have nobody, so they have to beat people up in restaurants and talk about politics where you can't get away from them after you've ordered your food. So I said, you don't have any obligation, nor should you even say anything to them. Save it for the radio. And I gagged on the food and I left. Okay, so that's the opening. Now play Shaboom again on the Savage Nation. I'll get to the other story. You know, little story. In other words, if I had said Benghazi and asked you, oh, what do you think this means? Should Hillary be indicted? 50,000 calls right away. Yeah, Mike, she should be indicted. That's awful. I heard it all morning and yesterday, and that Benghazi story is the big one. We know she's a bad woman. And absolutely not a good person. And what do you have to say, Bob, in Cleveland? Well, Mike, I wanted to say that Benghazi story is a huge... No, I'm not doing Benghazi. I did the armored vehicle story, and it went over like an armored vehicle. No one cares. So now let's go on to the next. Here's another big story, which is seven refugees with active TB were sent to Idaho by Obama on purpose. He sent the refugees into all white communities, knowing they were laden with tuberculosis in order to freak the people out. Now, what kind of president does a thing like that? Seven refugees with active TB were diagnosed shortly after their settlement in Idaho between 2011 and 2015, according to the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare. And this makes the seventh state to confirm to Breitbart News that recently arrived refugees have been diagnosed with active tuberculosis. The other states where Obama has infected people with TB include Louisiana, where he sent 21 infected, Florida, 11 infected. Colorado, 10 infected. Indiana, 4 infected. Kentucky, 9 infected in one county. North Dakota, 4 refugees who reside in the United States for less than 5 years are diagnosed. So in other words, TB, which was eradicated in the United States before Obama became president, is now resurging in the United States of America because he's an evil maniac. An evil maniac. No sane leader would do this to his nation unless he hates the nation and wants to hurt the people. There's no justification for this. In any other time, a leader like this would have been impeached and put in jail for infecting the general population. So, I mean, I could talk about that, but what are you going to say about it that I haven't said already? Nothing. So we'll move on. We'll move on. We'll tell you about this later on, the details of it. There's another story I want to cover. Which is, there's a deep divide in how blacks and whites see race. New numbers prove it, according to the L.A. Times, by a writer named Jawed Khalim. You just know how this article is going to be written, right? Let's put the two names together. L.A. Times, you know how conservative they are, and Jawed Khalim. You know Jawed Khalim is a conservative, probably a right-winger. So now you know how this story is going to end up, especially when they went to the Pew Research Center. Run by Juliana Horowitz. You can just see how this one's going to work out, who the bad guys are, okay? Now, yesterday I said something that I thought was intriguing, and only one person listened to this and heard it in the audience, where I noted that the European superstate was emerging, and the PU nations, used to be known as EU, I call them the PU nations because they stink to high heaven, are going to be morphed into one giant superstate, under the potato-faced Angela Merkel, the former communist. And what I said was, Merkel has achieved Hitler's dream of a united Europe under German control without having fired a shot. You got to hand it for that potato-faced lady. You really got to hand it to her. She didn't gas anyone. She didn't put anyone into a concentration camp. And yet she achieved a good portion of Hitler's goals. You got to hand it to Angela Merkel. She knows how to get things done. This is the way to do a dictatorship. You don't kill anyone. What you do is you invade a nation from without. Instead of invading other nations, you invade your own nation with foreigners who will never assimilate to your nation, and you destroy the cohesion, the demographics, the health, the sanity, and the language. In other words, you destroy the borders, language, and culture, and in so doing, you do exactly what dictators in the past have done, but you do it in reverse, and you achieve the same ends, which is absolute and total power. That's topic number three. Now let's move on to others on the Savage Nation on this Wednesday. You know, at some point I'm going to say I really don't care about anything. And that reaches a critical mass at a certain point because no matter what happens, no matter what this monster does in the White House, nothing touches him. He's not the Teflon Don. He's something different than the Teflon Don. He is not a Teflon Don. He's way beyond being a Teflon Don. He is an immune Don. He is immune to any possible criticism or attacks. And let me tell you something else. Hillary Clinton is a Teflon Donette. Nothing will touch her. So get used to it. Now I'll be back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Your Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust for tangible assets, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. So let's see, we cleaned up a little business. The company that made the armored vehicle seen in Virginia claims they're going overseas. I mean, all right, let's see what happens. We know the madman in the White House is capable of just about anything. We know that. That we know. Now he's conspiring with the ballet dancer in Canada. Another genius. The ballerina they picked to run Canada. The first thing he did was bring in 10,000 Syrian refugees to screw Canada. Then he's dealing with the esteemed princely king of Mexico. So the three geniuses now want to merge this into a North American union. Wouldn't that be great? Haven't you always wanted to have the hygiene of Mexico in your community? Haven't you always wanted to have a Royal Canadian Mountie in your house to tell you what you can think and what you can say? Wouldn't that be wonderful in North American Union? Just think of the hygienic beauty of having Mexico's standards of hygiene in the United States of America, let alone the police work. I mean, wouldn't you like federales running America? Get rid of your local police department and replace them with Federales troops from Mexico who answer to Obama or one of his minions. What a great world you're facing. Wouldn't you like to leave that for your daughter? Well, anyway, just some of these thoughts, you know, occasionally, you know, last night, a little time, trouble sleeping last night about the armored vehicle story, truthfully, because I know this guy is so evil. This guy is so devious. Let me stop right there, because the minute you say it, I'm sorry that the immune Don, no matter what you say about him, the more you say about him, it's true, the more they turn you off. They get mad at you. The immune Don, not Don Corleone, but Don Obama. Don Obama is so immune to any criticism. Don Corleone Obama is so immune to any kind of suggestion that he might be anti-American that you can't even say such things. But nevertheless, I lost sleep last night thinking that this guy would stop at nothing to hold power for himself and the Democrat Party. We saw this where we see this wherever they appear. They will use violence where violence is needed. Certainly lying is their stock and trade. They will use race war. They will use class warfare. Anything by all means necessary, by the way, is an edict of the left. Direct action means Black Lives Matter's lying, beating people up, making people submit to their thuggery. That's what by any means necessary means. That's a tenet of the American left, the Communist Party USA. Another tenet of the American left is, as I said, direct action, by all means necessary. They will stop at nothing to intimidate the middle class, and their standard bearer is none other than Potato Face's cousin, Hillary Clinton.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is, what day is it? Right, Tuesday, the end of June. Who cares about politics? Not, come on. Come on, don't you want to know what entertainers are saying about Brexit? Don't you want to know what the news is according to Madonna? What are you listening to talk radio for? Why don't you tune in NBC Nightly News or the CBS Evening News or ABC? Or maybe you can get one of the stone comedians at night to tell you what the reality is. You shouldn't be listening to me. What are you listening to me for? What do you want to know about what's going on in the world from my point of view? I mean, that's what you have to ask yourself. Why are you investing time listening to Michael Savage? And the answer, don't call me and tell me I'm Mike. That's not what I'm asking. I'm not begging for an answer on that. The fact is, the media is so biased, which is an old story, but now at a level of naked bias where they don't even care if you say they're biased. They're proud of it. The pinkos have become so emboldened in their, they're immune as well from criticism. The pinkos are immune from criticism. So if the average jerk doesn't even listen to radio, doesn't go on the internet much for the news. The average jerk out there, do you know where they get their news? They get it from, let's say, CNN. They'll tune in for a few minutes and they'll see what the liar Wolf Blitzer is feeding them today, or the psychopath with the bug eyes, whose name I won't mention, because you could fill in anyone's name in that one. If I say the psychopath with bug eyes on CNN, you could put in five names. They would all fit the bug eye job. I used to read tech. I used to have a hobby of mine. I think it was before radio. I would go on the internet to look up like odd photographs from history, and I would like crime scene photographs. There was a photographer named Ouija who was incredible. He got there before the police did. He got there before everybody. Took black and white pictures of bloody messes in the streets of New York. His name was, I don't know his real name, Ouija. You can still find him on the internet. But another thing I used to like to look at were like madhouse pictures, asylums. And now, of course, if you tune in C-SPAN and you see the Democrats holding a sit-in on the floor of Congress and you actually hone in on their faces and you do an overlay of the madhouse pictures of the 19th century and bug houses, there's a direct match, a direct matchup. Now they're wearing suits and ties and dirty dresses and they're sitting on the floor of Congress, even though they're congressmen and women. They're sitting in like they're outsiders. You know, we shall overcome. They're the oppressed now. Congress is now oppressed. So I say, what's the difference between bughouse pictures of the 19th century and Congress on the Democrat side? Very little. But nevertheless, if you looked at the eyes of the mad, pre-medication, when they had to put them in madhouses, now they release them into universities, to become professors of social science and such, you see there's a certain look in the eye of mad people. You can spot it. We all have these instincts. We can know crazy, but come on. You know and I know. You know, you say it politically, you can't say it, but you know crazy people when you run into them. There's either the spittle on the side of the mouth from the manic depressive medication. They usually work in the State Department. I saw a lot of that during the bombing of Serbia. There was a guy named Jamie something. He's married to Mata Hari on CNN. She came out. She looks awful. They dug her up in London during Brexit. The one with the fraudulent accent. I don't know her name. And the Mata Hari, the two-sider. She's married to this guy, Jamie. He had the white spittle. What's the medication that produces it that calms them down? The MDs, the manic depressives. I forget what it's called. It's a metal. A lightweight metal, not a heavy metal, a light metal. It's found in peri... What is it called? Lithium. Lithium medication, which is an early treatment, by the way, for so-called bipolar. I love bipolar. If you go to New York City, everyone's bipolar. You met anyone in New York who's not bipolar? That's crazy. What do you mean bipolar? Of course there's extremes. We know that. But basically, most people in big cities are bipolar. One minute they're up, the next minute they're down. You catch them a good day, they're up, and a bad day, they're down. Depending on what they ate the night before, whether they had a good relationship with someone. You don't know which side of the seesaw they're going to be on. So they use lithium to control that. And lithium has a side effect of the white spittle on the side of the mouth. This guy, Jamie, had it. He was glowing over the bombing. Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton engaged in a merciless 84-day bombing of Serbia in order to make sure that the Muslims in Albania succeeded. And in order to make sure that a pipeline ran through there. I wrote a whole article about it back in those days. But the point was, this guy was a psycho, a nut. He worked for Madeleine Halfbright, the brisket woman. How that one ever became Secretary of State is beyond me. You look at John Kerry today and go back to Madeleine Albright. Where did they get these people from? Why did they pick the most deceitfully obvious people in the world to run the State Department? What is the State Department, I ask myself? How did it even originate? Why did George Washington need a State Department? Why was it created? What was its point? Because all they do is operate for the internationalist community. I mean, if I were advising Trump, the first thing I would do is eliminate the State Department. I would turn it into a steak department. The only use they could have would be to create steak recipes and steak barbecue sauce for the world made in America. And anyone in the steak department who could still produce a good sauce and sell it overseas and bring in some money for the country, I'd leave. Otherwise, everyone gets fired and you send them to Belgium. They go to work in a muscle house selling moule. I mean, you think that the toxic muds of Belgium are responsible for the stupidity of the people in Belgium? I'm wondering about that. And by the way, why is the EU centered in that loser lowland country in Belgium? How did that become the center of Europe? First of all, they eat mussels. That's the start with. Now, in principle, I'm not against mussels. Although I'm not a seagull, I don't like shellfish. By and large, the waters around Belgium are polluted. So if you're going to get mussels from Belgium, which is the national dish, moule, French fries, it could explain the madness of the Belgian. How do you say a Belgian? Belgian. So it almost sounds like you're Belgian. If you're from the South, you said Belgian, because the guy could say you're saying Belgian, like you're from New Orleans. I'm saying Belgian. Are you Belgian? It could be the reason that they're so bad in thinking, in rational thinking in Belgium. Belgium. That's a tricky one, you know. Peter Piper picked a pack of pickled peppers. I used to try these in school to keep from going mad. You know, I was a kid with a fast mind. I would go crazy in school listening to the teachers. I would go nuts. I would rip hair out of my hand. I'm looking back now. I would tear hairs out of my left arm in order to keep myself awake. From the boredom of school, from the first to the fifth grade, I learned what a peninsula was in five different years. I learned four things in 5 years. It was such a waste of my time. I should have been taught how to play the violin. I'd be as good as whoever is a good violinist. Actually, I tried the violin. I didn't like the instrument at all. It made me cry. Too sad. I mean, it's a great skill, I admit. But all I do is I listen to a violin. It's a very sad instrument. It's like the human emotion itself is like the human heart. Where was I when I got so reasonably and purposely distracted? Because if you say the word Benghazi, if anyone sneaks onto the show by tricking Jim into thinking you're going to say something, and then I take you and you dare say Benghazi, I hang up on you immediately. You will not hear that on my show today. You haven't had enough of it yet today? You're going to hear more yet before the week is over. Before July 4th, Benghazi. I'd rather talk about Ben Gay than Benghazi. That's how much I care about. Yes, she's a criminal. Yes, she told the generals to stand down. Yes, she purposely let him get killed. Yes, it was to smuggle weapons from Libya to Syria. We know that. It's an old story. Wait a minute. Here, you want the whole story? You want the name of the generals? You want the truth and nothing but the truth? And so help you, God? Not so help me, God. So help you, God. It's actually in Government Zero. So you'll buy 10 books. I'll make another $2. That's not the point. It's such a well-researched book. It's a shame that most of you didn't buy it. It was a bestseller. Don't get me wrong. Publisher was very happy. It sold like 150,000 copies in hardcover. That's nothing to spit at. I know many of you geniuses in New York, you know. You're all novelists. Everyone's got a novel in them. Milton and his girlfriend, she's a novelist. What has she written? She is working on a great novel. It'll sell 14 copies on YouTube. But if you turn into turn to Government Zero and you look up Benghazi, you will see the names of the generals who were ready to help the poor, beleaguered individuals at our embassy. You will see which generals were dismissed by the Teflon president, the immutable Teflon president. They actually have names. And what's amazing to me, I'm not amazed, one of the generals that this bum in the White House threw out after 30 years of service to this nation happened to be an African-American general of great distinction. And because he was ready to send support to protect our interests in Libya at the time, because he was ready, willing, he was in command of the whole area, Obama fired him. Did you know that? Look him up. He's in Government Zero. I haven't heard from him since. They dummied him up somewhere. I hope he's not in the same condo complex as John Boehner. You know, I imagined him the other day. I mean, you don't see this guy. The guy wrecked the country. John Boehner, the one who cried all the time with the pink tie. Remember him? You wanted to like him because he looked like a trustworthy white guy, but he turned out to be a snake. Not really a snake, just like he was put there by the other party, the globalists, in other words. The guys from Belgium picked him. When they gave him, he doesn't eat muscles, a guy like that. I imagined him in retirement now. They dummied him up. He's gone. He's in Jackson. Where is he? They said he was moving to Jacksonville after he was going to be Speaker of the House, right? So they said, listen to his great dream in life. After he was all these years, he was going to go to his condo in Jacksonville. Okay, I'm not knocking Jacksonville. It's cold down there most of the year. It's not even like Florida. Well, Jacksonville is actually the real Florida compared to the people in southern Florida who are not really Floridians. They're New Yorkers. You don't understand Florida. The real Florida is northern Florida. They're more like Georgia, southern rebel types. The hard-nosed guys who actually save America every time it needs to be saved. Not like the people in New York who vote 50 times and hate the country. Not like the people in southern Florida who rip the country off every which way to Sunday. Rip you off of Medicaid fraud, voter fraud, Medicare fraud, environmental fraud, real estate fraud. And they want to live in Europe. They all want to live in Europe. They hate the country. They hate the sovereignty of America. Why don't they move to Europe already? Because they can't get away with what they get away with here. Nevertheless, what I was saying to you is Boehner is there somewhere, I think in his condo in Jacksonville. Not denigrating Jacksonville. This is about Boehner, not about Jacksonville. But that's what he picks. He didn't pick West Palm Beach. He couldn't afford it. He didn't pick Fort Lauderdale. He couldn't afford Fort Lauderdale. So he picked where he could afford. Probably $49,000 when he bought it. $39,000 for two bedrooms and maybe two bathrooms top. Maybe one and a half. A guest half bathroom for the visitors who bring him the supplies from all the years of loyal service. So imagine, what would a guy like that do in retirement? So if picture a guy like him, drink for sure. That's why we called him, we used to use clink, the sound of ice cubes. Either he was crying or drunk, one or the other. So you'd send them cases of pink ties, that's number one. I would imagine a guy like him wouldn't even drink Johnny Walker Red. The kind of scotch he would drink you never heard of. What was it, like Four Roses? I think they still make that stuff. That's real rot gut. They probably sent him cases of Four Roses, I would imagine, and his closet has to be full of Hellman's mayonnaise, ready to go, with everything. Goes well with all white bread sandwiches. Whatever white bread sandwich you want, there's Hellman's ready for you. So a guy like him, he's got to have cases of Hellman's in one closet, cases of Four Roses in the other. What more does he need? Between scotch and mayonnaise, what more is there in life, right? And taking your shoes off after all these years. At least I was thinking about that the other night. What am I, why are you, you're mad at me because I'm not talking about Benghazi with anger and rage. Do you realize this is July 4th weekend and most of you have nothing to do? That's the sad truth. Most Americans, oh, yeah, can't wait, July 4th weekend. July 4th weekend's coming. Hey, hey, hey. Nowhere to go. No one has a friend in the world. No one, except for church groups and people who are sexually different than you. They all have friends. They have a rally. 4 million people show up. Regular traditional Americans have a rally. 50 people show up. And then the fascists attack them and call themselves anti-fascists. That's the country you're living in today. But most of you have nowhere to go. You think you have somewhere to go on July 4th. It's probably one of the most depressing holidays of the year next to Christmas. It's another holiday that causes great depression because you think everyone else is at a barbecue somewhere. It's from watching those cop movies. Like every time you see a cop movie, they're having a barbecue in Suffolk County, New York, somewhere. Everyone knows, hey, John, you want another link? Everyone's there, you know, the kids. You wish to God you could be there, but they're not even there. There's no cop parties anymore. Trust me, the whole thing is an illusion. In that sense, the Buddhists were correct. It's all an illusion. The only thing real is me. And I'll be back in a minute to prove it to you.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver. Call 800-BUYCOIN. Should I talk about it for a minute? Symphony Sid was a jazz disc jockey in the U.S. And many people have said he introduced bebop to the mass audience. Probably I'm one of the people who first heard bebop in the 50s on the radio, listening to Symphony Sid late at night, coming back from Manhattan, probably, you know, dancing, drinking some marijuana, whatever. In those days, we listened to music. I remember the Silver Cup Bread Factory, which is now a movie studio in Long Island City, and the smoke coming out of the bread factory. Believe me, they produced a better value for the money as a Silver Cup Bread Factory than the pornography they produce in the building now. This is the smell of the bread coming over the Queensboro Bridge, and the smell of the bread being baked in the Silver Cup Bread Factory was a lot more, let us say, of value than the garbage being produced in the film studio. The film studio. But nevertheless, I remember hearing Charlie Parker, which today, if you ask me, my favorite today, the number one is the Charlie Parker piece that I have, either The Bird or Bloom Didio or Star Eyes. I never heard music like this in my life. And to this day, it's hard to imagine how good this was. Anyway, this jockey, Sid Torin, was born Sidney Tarnopol, Russian-Jewish name. Then you looked, right away, look how long he lived. The first thing I look up, if it's anyone I'm interested in, born 1909, died 1984. Oh, I should be dead already. Like, you, right away, you look at that. Like, he only lived to 73. So you try to, like, justify, eh, he was a jazz. He probably, you know, probably led a cleaner life than I do. And he died anyway. You always try to justify why he died younger than you would. How come you're alive? How come he's dead? Do you do that when you look at, like, obituaries? I do it all the time. I figure they use drugs and this and that. Usually they didn't. They went to church. They went home at 8 o'clock.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Benghazi not spoken here. Armored vehicles not spoken here. TB not spoken here. Refugees not spoken here. Pakistan not spoken here. Transgender not spoken here. I'm not interested. None of the topics that could get you interested to call a show. Not interested today. It's too close to July 4th. I don't care anymore. We know what's going on in the world. We know who the crooks are and the thieves and the criminals. We also know they're untouchables. And there's no Elliot Ness out there. That's all. So I'm talking about a disc jockey that I listened to as a kid called Symphony Sid. Now, you don't know who he is. A lot of you don't know. You're too young or whatever. It doesn't matter. The point is there's a story related to this. Jack Kerouac was one of my literary heroes in the 50s. He may remember he wrote On the Road. He wrote a piece that went like this. He said, Dean took the wheel and drove clear the rest of the way to New York, and we began to hear the Symphony Sid show on the radio with all the latest bop, and now we were entering the great and final city of America, Jack Kerouac on the road. So, okay, I grew up in the 50s, and I listened to this guy, Symphony Sid, disc jockey, and I loved his voice, I loved his demeanor, I loved the way he carried himself on the air. So now I look him up. I didn't know much about him. And I see he died at 73. And now I'm looking at this. In the final year, Sid Torin had three marriages, all of which ended in divorce. We had of his time that way. Blah, blah, blah. He retired to Islamorada, Florida. How do you say that? There's a country, there's a city called Islam in Florida. Is that, no, Islamorada in Florida. I know it's there. When I go down there, I know it's somewhere on the road, like Alligator Highway. He retired to Islamorada in Florida in 1973, where he enjoyed fishing and had his own boat. That's exciting. That's a great way to spend your retirement, just sitting on a fishing boat, getting drunk. He also did a full-time air shift on a Miami Beach jazz radio station, and he was a heavy smoker, and he died of emphysema and heart disease. I say thank God. I don't mean that he died. I'm not glad he died. I'm saying thank God I read that. Robert understands that. Remember I was saying he died at 73 and I was like freaked out? So I said, okay, now there's a reason. He was a heavy smoker and he died of emphysema and heart disease. It makes sense. Because if I look at a guy who dies and I'm still alive and he was younger than me, I get freaked out. Like, why am I still living? But all right, thank God he was a smoker and he died of emphysema. If you know what I mean, you got to follow the drift. I mean, maybe it's too New York guy on the street for the average. I don't know anymore. Maybe there's like a rap that I would do with friends somewhere on a street corner and they would get it. Even though I have no friends and no street corners anymore, if I had friends on a street corner, they would understand what I'm talking about, and they'd be, you know what, doing in their pants. They'd be bent over. Because I could do that. I know how to make you laugh, and I enjoy it. And by the way, am I the only one who's obsessed with this whole thing of longevity? Since I'm a kid, I've been like, you know, I would always look up like a baseball player, how long they lived. Then I'd start to wonder, even as a kid, what they die from. Unless they were hitting the head with a ball, I'd be worried, like, what did the... So, you know, you look like this one died at 35. Like, for example, right now I'm into Charlie Parker all over again, the great saxophone player. Play some Charlie Parker for the people out there who don't know what I'm talking about. For the white bread eaters out there who never heard of Charlie Parker. The only thing I heard of was Mantovani when they were growing up. I was listening to Charlie Parker. They were listening to Mantovani, who wasn't bad, by the way, in his own way. For a funeral in Toledo, you'd want to play Mantovani. As you're burying a friend, you'd play Mantovani. My friends, no one got buried because no one died yet. I don't think any of my friends are dead. I heard one of them died the other day. This is what I'm talking about. Charlie Parker. He's the zenith. He's the top of the heap. He's the best guy in the world in music. 35 years old, dead. But that doesn't matter. The amount of he died at 35 from heroin, does that diminish his music? No. No, that's what I'm trying to say to you. It doesn't take away the recording. But listen to the... Okay, forget about it. I'm not going to explain it. I'm not a musicologist. So anyway, I love this music, and I listen to it when I'm really down, and my... You know, when I can't make sense out of my life, or I can't get the balance back. Do you ever get that? I mean, I got to restore my equilibrium from time to time, and sometimes it's easier than others. It's called quietude, meditation. When things get hectic, I go off a little off the beam. So when I can't get it back on track... I listen to certain music, like Charlie Parker, or I listen to Coltrane in the past, put me back on track. Why? Just play it again so I'll explain it to people why, what the saxophone means to me. For an example, and I'm going to get back, I'll say Benghazi again in case you want to listen to news. I'll say Trump and I'll say Hillary. Will you listen now? Trump, Hillary, election, polls. Okay, so listen to the way he's making that horn work. So this is the man coming through the instrument. This is not a man playing an instrument. This is the man coming through the instrument. Okay, so what I'm saying to you is he's got his, if you want to put it in a vernacular that's more understandable, it's his soul being played out through his music. He's screaming through his horn. Now this has been said before in other ways 1,000 different times. I get that. However, since I am in the broadcasting business, and I have been for 22 years, and I'm fairly successful at it, I'm going off message today, and I'm not going to talk about the election too much, or Benghazi, or Hillary. I'm not going to talk much about Obama's criminality, and how the Teflon Don gets away with it again. It's an old story already. I'm not going to hawk you to go to text my name to get me in the National Radio Hall of Fame by putting in Savage to 36500. I'm not going to do any of that right now. I'm going to do this for now because I want to ask you a question. And here's what I want to ask you, my friends. Are any of you out there in the youngers, I don't mean olders, everyone old is worried about dying, young, in their 30s, do you ever worry about, like, mortality? You ever look up, like, and worry about how long you're gonna... I think in the 30s is a very big thing for guys in their 30s. 20s, you don't think about it. 20s, it's like still the teenagers. They push it into their 20s, they think they're never gonna die, they're immortal. But when you hit 30, and already the gray hair, no matter what you do, there's the gray, and no matter how many Femen you put on, you can, still there. And then no matter how many sit-ups you do, they got the thing of the gut already a little. No matter how many times you do sit-ups, they're still a little, around the waist. You realize that your body's changing. So do you ever think about, like, your father when he died, your grandfather? And if you have kids, you do. If you don't, you don't think about anything but yourself. So what I'm saying to you is, mortality is the issue today because the nation has a mortality as well. If you study history, see, you knew I was going to lead you somewhere. At least you were hoping that this whole long riff was a prelude to some intellectual genius on the history of the world, which it's going to be in a minute. What I'm saying to you is just as people come and go, nations come and go. And it's up in the air right now as to how old America really is. Are we in our adolescence? Absolutely not. Are we in middle age? No, we're not in a middle age. How many nations live that long? How long did Rome live? We are not anywhere near as long as Rome lived as a conquering great power, and even Rome fell. We are in the stages of decay and decline, and we are collapsing. That's the only explanation as to how a shyster like Obama could become president and hold on to office for almost 8 years. There's no other explanation. What great nation on earth would let a phony like him stay in office so long and reelect him, no less, after all the damage he's done? No other nation. But the nation is in such decline for so many reasons that you have to understand that it's, I don't know. I don't know when the coffin's coming for the nation. I don't have an answer to that question. It's a nation we're talking about, not a person. Well, there's a little history of why I was getting up to it, if you want to use a reason for it. So now I'm going to take some calls on various things. And here's the thing. Even though this guy, Symphony Sid, we're going back to radio now, was so unique in radio at his time, and he was so good, people put him down. And a lot of the critics hated him. They put him down. They said he was not really that good. Someone called his announcing annoying, some creepy little critic. Announced him in the middle of a show. That's AOL yelling at me. They said he was annoying. Another one said he gave a painful imitation of a hipster. Another critic who reviewed a reissue of him with the Charlie Parker concert said Symphony Sid is odious and said he gives a painful imitation of a hipster. You hear? That's some jealous, idiot writer in his time. However, listen to this. Because of Symphony Sid's importance in that pre-rock music era, the staff of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland included him in a display about the most influential disc jockeys in history, which, by the way, is why I absolutely must be nominated into National Radio Hall of Fame, or all of my work will be forgotten. That's the terrible reality of it. The world is so vicious and so full of liars and talentless, jealous people that that's the reason. Here we go. Here's another one, another nut. He's into the mortality. I love this topic. Even when I was 5 years old, I had the mortality thing working on me. I don't know why. It was always with me. I was that kind of kid. Maybe I was like a born psychiatrist or a rabbi or preacher. I don't know. But I always like the whole thing of the world. Any minute the world was going to... Let's go to Brian on KSFO. It's another nut like me. Brian, what did you just say about mortality?
Yeah, that's me too. Ever since I was young, I never thought I'd live to legally drive a car. So I started when I was like 12. I never thought I'd graduate from high school, so I almost didn't. I never thought I'd make 21 to legally drink or get married. So I just was real wild when I was younger.
How old are you now? How far did you make it?
Well, I'll be 57 in September.
Oh my God! But you see, so you had this sense of mortality hanging over you even as a kid?
Yeah. Yeah.
But why? Why do you think why were you affected that way?
It was all the talk about, nuclear, weapons going to blow us all up. I had no idea.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Like, I come from the generation of the Soviet Union and the U.S. blowing the world up. The world's coming to an end. And we had a grade school today. You know what we did as kids? Duck and cover. We'd have air raid drills in public schools in New York, in the Bronx. In the middle of a class, you're sitting there, she's talking about math, and she'd surprise you. Some teacher with very bad toilet water that gave me migraines to this day. And she also exhibited herself a little. I don't want to go into that. She'd sit on the desk. I don't want to tell you this one was in the middle of talking about, like, history. All right, duck and cover. And you had to throw your books down and run into a closet to get under your desk. That was supposed to save you from a nuclear explosion. Could you believe that?
Oh, yeah, we had the duck and cover. I would.
So today, if they did it in the school, all the school moms would come out. They'd have put him on drugs. The kids would be shocked. They'd be crying. Every child would get irritable bowel syndrome from that one act. They'd have to go into therapy. They'd have to have, like, clowns come in and put special clothing on. I mean, crazy. A nation of weaklings. No one could take anything anymore. We expected a nuclear holocaust every second. Next second, we were eating peanut butter and jelly after the world was coming to an end. All right, get back to your desks. Oh, it's lunchtime. Go have your peanut butter and jelly. It didn't affect us that much. We thought it was a joke. Secondly, when we went in the closet, I would not go under the desk. I chose the closet because it was girls and boys in the closet with the doors shut and you were very close to each other. You had a chance to, like, have a little fun. I mean, everybody played around in the closet during the duck and cover thing. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth. Call 800-BUY-COIN. The music comes back in. How do you explain a thing like that? Welcome to the show. This is Savage of the Savage Nation. We're talking about, not about the news. We're not doing the armored vehicles again. I'm not mentioning Hillary and Benghazi. I'm not going to say Muslim or refugee. I'm so not interested right now. I'm interested only in this because I was talking about longevity and fear of dying. I was talking about the king of radio and what voices were like and what I grew up with. And then we got into that. But listen to how the drum Buddy Rich came back. Now, there, you're talking about Charlie Parker, a black musician, with a Jewish drummer, Buddy Rich. Now, could you imagine in this day and age what we've degenerated to in this country with such hatred that is being put out there because of this president who has instilled such hatred in the black community? Have you seen what's going on in the country? It's gotten better in your opinion. You're crazy. It's gotten much worse. That's what's happened. Let's go to the callers. Lamar on line two, WMAL in Washington. What's on your mind, Lamar?
Years ago in the jazz world, there was a gentleman named Art Tatum, one of the great, probably the greatest jazz pianists of all time. And several years ago, I called into you and I gave you the title as the Art Tatum of talk radio because
that was quite an honor because I grew up listening to these greats. Whether it was Art Tatum, Charlie Parker, Coltrane, I heard them all as a kid. Now, remember, a white boy in a middle-class house, not exposed to jazz music other than through his own ear, listens to this, and there's a message coming through to him that he never heard anywhere else. You know what I'm saying?
Definitely.
Yeah. Now, here's something I say. Let me throw a question back at you another way. You're a black guy, I'm a white guy, in an age of total division in this country. I don't know whether you listen to my show regularly, irregularly, and why you listen at all. Would you care to talk about that for a second?
Sure. So I've been listening to you for probably 5 years now here in Baltimore, Maryland. And what resonated was just the fact that you just tell the truth and hit the nail on the head, and you just go for it, you know, no holds bar. And that's what got me. And
so, in other words, you're used to a world of such liars. Everyone's telling you a BS job, even though they say, I'm your friend, they give you a BS. But with me, you think you're at least hearing, whether you agree with me or not, what I actually think.
Definitely. I can't stand liars. I can't stand deception. So, I mean, in any aspect of life. So, I'm definitely not going to be in the media.
All right, well, that's a great compliment. I mean, truthfully, it is a great compliment, Lamar. All I can do is send you a copy of Teddy and Me because I think it's an honest book. Now, you don't even have to agree with my politics to love my dog. So stay on the line. We'll send that out to you. Now let's go back to here's the topic we're going to get hung up on right now, which is a fixation on age and death. And a lot of people are calling on it. This is a new area in radio right now. I myself have been fixated on age and death since I'm a child. Remember the teachings of Don Juan, the hippies listening to the show, a big book in the 60s, 70s, where he said death lives with us all the time. I see death every day. I just tell her to take a walk and drop dead. Go visit my neighbor. the one I love so much. If I say, hey, how you doing today? Fine, Death. You feeling good? Good. I don't need you today. Come back in 100 years. Go across the street. Don't treat him so nice. Just tell him to go away. He's a busy guy. He's got a lot of choices. He doesn't have to be with you. That's all. What are you sitting afraid of? He'll be back soon enough.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
Playing it for a reason. A, because I can't hear the word Benghazi one more second without puking. A, if you say Hillary one more minute, I'm going to throw myself off a bridge. The thought of her becoming president, I mean, I don't know what country to move to. I'm even thinking of Belgium. I'm so depressed. I'd even go to Belgium to get out of here if she became president. I can't imagine the lecture she would give us every day about human rights and gays and lesbians and LGBT while she's robbing us blind. Every day, transgender, that's all you're going to hear for 4 years. Transgender rights and lesbian rights and gay rights while they're robbing us blind in the Clinton Foundation. So that's why I'm doing a show today on death and dying, really. It's not really death and dying. It's an age and death fixation since early age. All right, so there's news now. News. The headline, terror at Turkish airport, Brussels-style attack, blowing up what? The Islamists did it again. Now, first of all, it's a Muslim nation. Let's start with that one. It's not Muslims against Christians. This is fanatical, insane Muslims against, I would say, moderate Muslims. Even though Turkey plays both sides, it's an advanced nation. It was the first nation in the world, by the way, to give women the right to vote. I don't know if you know that, but that's an old story that I could throw in as a little side note to give you a little juice for the lamb chop. But what am I supposed to say about it? You're going to talk about Turkey and bombing now? Okay, so it's an interconnected world, but do you really care about Turkey? Most of you say a bomb went off in Turkey at the airport, they shot it up. Say, what else is new? The fanatical Muslims did it again, but it's not Islam that did it. Well, is it? Well, it isn't really. They attacked an Islamic country. So who did it? I was going to say, it's people who hijacked Islam. What's the difference what you call it? There's a group of Hitlerite maniacs running around with headscarves who call themselves Muslims, and we're doing nothing to stop them, except sitting here shaking in our boots. FBI, CIA, NSA, sitting shaking in their boots, old fat white men, sitting there terrified that they're going to lose their pensions before they lose their life. That's running the show now. There are 1,000 operations, we've got 2,000 under surveillance, we can't stop Orlando, we can't stop Boston, we can't stop this, we can't stop that, but we have them in our sights. But if you dare say a word against Islam, Loretta Lynch will have you arrested in 2 seconds. That we can do. Guaranteed. What a country we're living in. You say Turkey, the guy says beef jerky in his head. He does an association. Terror at Turkey, the guy, doesn't average guy. You say Turkey, it rhymes with jerky. The guy goes to a store, gets nervous, he buys beef jerky. You don't know what to do. What are you going to do about it? Turkey. No one knows what to do about it. Sorry they died. Now what? Now around the clock. There's Wolf Blitz already. Changed his shirt. Put in a new socks already. They give him the new jacket. The powder came out. Jake Tapper already is busy for the night. He doesn't have to say Benghazi now. Now he can talk about this all night with the eyes. And then Fred Farid Zachariah. Farid Zachariah will come out. Freddie Zachariah. Give him the bug-eye job on what really happened. Give him the whole bug-eye story. To tell you, although it was Muslim, it was not really Muslim, because although they were Muslims, they were not Muslim, because they attacked a Muslim country, it was not to do with Muslim. In fact, we think it was white skinheads disguised as burqa-wearing Muslims in order to disgrace care, and the United States of America should crack down on skinheads and traditional Americans who want to leave the European Union. In no way should you connect this in any way to Islam, because it has nothing to do with it. That would be what you're going to hear later on. So now let's play some music. Play another piece of music. Any rock and roll, some doo-wop, whatever. I'd rather talk about vacuum cleaners than Turkey right now.
The treasure of love.
Clyde McFadden, could you imagine?
It's easy to find. It's waiting for you. If your heart
is slow, turn it off. Okay, play it, play it. But it's too slow. It's the age of Elvis, when you had nothing to do but sit in a Ford or a Chevy for hours with a V8. It didn't even go that fast. By today's standards, a Honda could beat it. An average Honda. You look back on the 0 to 60 times. I'm a car fanatic. So I look at Road and Track, like in the cars that come out. It was always 0 to 60. I've been reading Road and Track since I'm 15 and I wanted a Jaguar. So 0 to 60 in 7.3 seconds. Well, your father's car did it in 17 seconds. That was considered fast, but today even a V6 will do it faster than that by comparison. Those cars weren't fast by today's standards. So I'm saying the music was also slow. Everything was slow in those days. Nothing was fast. So when I heard music that was fast, It lifted me out of my basic morass of the times. I was bored out of my mind, whether it was because of depression or my mind was fast and I was living in a slow world. I don't know what it was. So when I heard At the Hop by Danny and the Juniors, which we'll play in a second, Robert just got the cue, At the Hop, I come up with it. He's supposed to find it and throw. When I heard At the Hop, and I was in the seventh grade with a crew cut haircut and peg pants to try to look like Elvis Presley, even though I was from the Bronx, and I didn't look at all like Elvis. So now let's move it up to now. 2016, here we are. The world's so fast. Everything's moving so quickly. So what do we need? Why is everyone so drugged? If the world's so fast and it's so interconnected and so wonderful, why is everyone drugged? What are they all in therapy and on medication for? What is everyone on drug? I don't understand. It's such a fast-paced world that they're drugged out of their minds. I still don't use drugs. You have to take it from me. Straight up, I'm not on any prescription medication. Not one. I don't take one drug. Thank God. Not one. I take no medication whatsoever. Once in a while, an allergy pill, and that's about it. Aspirin, yes. Every night I take a little aspirin, sometimes a big one. Occasional drink, well, I cut back on that too now. I hate alcohol all of a sudden. You know how I said to you, all these years I've lived on the three Vs, vitriol, vodka. What was the third one? Something reminded me. Oh, yeah, vitriol, vodka, and vitamins. I was joking about that about a month ago. Someone reminded me, said, Michael, you said you owe your longevity to the three Vs, vitriol, vodka, and vitamins. It's true. I don't drink much of the vodka anymore. I can't stand it. I ran into a guy the other day. Want to hear this about drinking? It's a funny thing. I was at a private club, new club I joined, nice people. I don't know why they let me in, but the thing is, it's an old Groucho thing. In this case, it was any club that having as a member, I wouldn't join. In this case, I joined. So this nice guy, so one guy says to me, I was at the bar, and I ordered a club soda. Now, the guy next to me is ordering club soda. So I said to him, two people that don't drink. He says, you know what? He said, I stopped 15 years ago. I said, how come? So he says, well, he said I was drinking more and enjoying it less. He says, I wasn't getting high on it anymore, just getting depressed, and I was slurring. So I stopped drinking. I thought that was very interesting. Even with alcohol, it reaches a point. What's the good of it? What is it going to do for you? And the hangovers and the headaches and the next day and the this and the that. It's not worth it. So like last night was a very hot night out here in the San Francisco area. Horrible. I hate the heat. I hate it. I moved here because it wasn't hot. I moved into the area because it wasn't hot. The old Mark Twain, you know, never spent a colder winter than a summer in San Francisco. And I loved it. When I first came here, the fog would blow in. In the summer, I used to like seeing the German tourists shivering in shorts while I wore an overcoat and a scarf in August. It was a kick. You know, like, it gave you like you got over on the tourists. They didn't know. They read a book. They said to them, going to San Francisco was like California, you know, with palm trees. They were all like Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, you know, strudel heads. They were coming out for the sun and surf in San Francisco. They didn't realize this was a unique, crazy city, weather-wise, as everywhere. So I love that part of it, the weather, right? Now we're getting the freak heat. It's not global warming. It's every spring. There's no records being broken. I keep very careful records of it all. You get the heat 3-4 days, then it blows out. The fog comes in. We call it a marine layer, those of us in the boating business. So nevertheless, it was so hot here. I was dying. So I said, well, I can't sit after the studio, do nothing. I'm going to go for a long walk. So I don't want to walk in San Francisco because I don't have galoshes to step over the human waste and the needles, let alone the bums and what we're going on this weekend. I didn't want to go in a restaurant, if you don't mind. I read about a little disease that's going around from a certain special community that you can't mention. A disease that's killing and it could be spread quite casually. I didn't want to go over the bridge, I'll be very honest with you. I mean, it's a horrible disease, and I don't really want to go around, like, right now, the 100th. So I went for a walk yesterday after the show to a town called Sausalito, north of San Francisco, over the Golden Gate Bridge. You know, charming little place. You could vomit how charming it is. It's so charming, you don't want to be there. It's not really charming. So I go there, and, like, a lot of tourists go there. They think it's like Carmel. I don't know what they go to Carmel for. You're better off going to Carvel than Carmel. There's nothing in Carmel. Bunch of snotty people driving around in ugly cars thinking that they're special. Everyone wants to, thinking of running to Clint Eastwood and they're gonna like get his autograph. There's nothing there. Look how charming. I don't like charming to begin with. Charm depresses me. It's like postcard. I don't like charm. I like grit. So nevertheless, I take a walk. I hadn't been there in years because I avoid tourist trap. So I take this walk. I'm gonna walk the whole town. I'm gonna park on one side way up by, a place, a lunch place there. By and I'm going to walk all the way to the other side of town and back. I figure it's 2 miles. Teddy wasn't with me. He's with the groomer on Monday and Friday. So I figured, all right, because I want to schlep him in the heat. You're dragging a dog, even though he has a bridle. Sometimes he gets hung up on a particular scent of urine. And even with the bridle and the roller that goes out 20 feet, he gets locked into an area. And I'm walking, and I think he's there, and I feel something dragging on me like a fish on a line. It's like him. He got hung up on like some smell what's wrong with this dog? You know, when he's with me, I don't think he's a dog. Like, I treat him like a being. How you doing? Fine. So you have a relationship. You get in the street, there he is, the dog again. Nose into the dirtiest, filthiest places on earth. A nose under a garbage can, a fire hydrant. He can't pass a leaf without rubbing against it right after the bath. He stinks in 10 minutes. Thank God he wasn't with me yesterday, so I was able to walk at a quicker pace without dragging an albatross on the chain. I'm walking and walking, and at every block I get closer to the tourist area, it gets uglier. There they are, the ice cream lickers. You know, and Van Gogh did some great paintings, and one of them was called the potato eaters. If I could paint, I would do the ice cream lickers. And it would be the America of today. Wherever you go, there is a big, small, fat, skinny, the cone in the hand and licking, with the tongue out. I got nauseous as I was walking. So it's like you hear like them talking in French, and in between the licks, monsieur, 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 and he's licking. They're normally good-looking people. Two morons, again, licking cones and marching around looking. What are they looking at? And every minute they have the sticks now. The Chinese particularly, they came here with the sticks now, the camera sticks. This I cannot believe. Everywhere I turned, there was someone from China squatting down next to the bay with a camera stick, posing for it with himself next to the water like there's no water in China. He never saw salt water before. He came in from the Gobi Desert. And there he, oh, look at this, I was in San Francisco. He's sending it back immediately to his relatives, slaving in China somewhere, and he's lucky he's next to the... I don't understand people. What's so special about a picture of yourself in Sausalito? Never mind, Sausalito could be anywhere. It could be in Turkey. I shouldn't have said Turkey. It could be anywhere, wherever you go. Here I am, I'm in this, now this. Everyone's a star behind their camera. Everyone's a movie star. Everyone is a Spielberg with a little camera. Wherever they go, they're the center of the movie. A movie is running in their head. They're the director, they're the actor, they're the producer, they're the audience because no one else wants to see it. And everywhere you turn, it's the camera sticks and the ice cream cones. So I walked and I walked. I couldn't wait. I was dying till I got back to the car. Once you're halfway down, you're all the way through, like a whole walk back. And then you pass the restaurants. And you start to think, what are they doing? When people come on a tour, on a vacation. What does the average person do? It's what everyone does. Right now, they sit in the restaurant, they put the head back like they're special, look out the window like you can't buy a meal. I love that look. Like, I can't afford a meal. She's sitting in there with the menu, and she's got a glass of wine, you know, real garbage, but it's a glass of wine, and she's got the menu, and she gives you a look like you go by, like, oh, I'm sitting in this restaurant on top of the world. If only you peasant could afford to eat it. It's unbelievable. The acts people put on, sitting there with the wine and the menu, like there, she's finally going to have a wonderful time in her life, because she's never eaten a piece of fish before, or had a glass of bad wine. Never in her life has she had a piece of fish, or had very bad Chardonnay. Never, till she got to Sausalito. And that was the extent of my walk. I got back to the car gagging. I turned the engine on and turned on the air conditioner, and that's when I went to the bad Chinese restaurant that I told you about before. I had to sit next to two guys talking about Brexit as loud as they could, and I couldn't get away from them. And on that little note, I'm going to go right down the Art Tatum break.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Jim Suits. All right, play's over. Here's another one, died young. You don't know why, but I think it was the lifestyle. Let's put it that way. So people like the show. Here's a guy, Mike Elliott, goes on Facebook, and he says, Mike, I'm literally in tears at the SF Tourist hot take. So funny. Keep it going after the break. That was hilarious. Sulin Gray says, love the idea of painting the ice cream lickers, the potato eaters sharply in my mind's eye. So there are people who hear me. There are people who don't want to hear every day about Benghazi and Donald Trump. They like something else. I have 20 pages of sound I haven't touched. Would you believe I got sidetracked today? Yes, I know about Turkey. What can I do about it? Nothing. Nothing. I'm sorry for what happened. It's not my problem. I can't do anything about it. In the interconnected world, I'm supposed to have a vigil now for Turkey. Next I'll hear I'm supposed to get flowers somewhere and go out with some group in Oakland, California. They're crying over it. No, they won't cry over that one because it's nothing to do with their particular lifestyle. Brussels-style attack, 10 dead, 40 reported, armed men seeing fleeing terminal. Terrible. But I want to remind you, and this is not to be PC, it's Muslims killing Muslims. Turkey is an Islamic nation. The bombers are Muslim. So this is a conundrum for those of you who want to divide it up into, you know, clear-cut divisions. It's not going to work that way. And we have to talk about that one day, but not, no, I'm just not going to do it. I'd rather not do it. I'd rather get a case of Zika than talk about this. I could get over Zika faster than talking about this. I can't do it. I cannot take it anymore. When I come back, more about agent death fixations on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Unfortunately, we don't have that tempo in talk radio. More than half of what you hear is about Benghazi or about Hillary. And I don't want to hear it, so you don't want to hear it. I've had enough already. Now, what am I going to say about this event in Turkey that you don't already know? What can we do? Revel in this in one way or another? Roll in the blood like CNN or Fox News is going to do now for 12 hours straight? You're going to say, well, it's Muslims. Yeah, but it's a Muslim country. Okay, so I said that already in the hour before. Istanbul, Turkey, Islamic nation, they're fighting for their lives against their crazies within their co-religionists or crazies. So what's the solution to this? Do I have a solution? No. Does anyone have a solution? No. I mean, you could say bomb their homeland because they have one now. They were in the past, I used to hear 20 years ago, oh, you can't bomb them because there's no center. They're everywhere. Well, that was true then, but they have a homeland now. It's a homeland that they didn't have before till Obama made our troops leave it. We had conquered the Sunni triangle. The soldiers had, the Marines had. Had great loss of life and blood, and they had pacified the Sunni triangle during the Iraq war, thanks to George Bush, which he was correct in that regard, and then Obama abruptly withdrew with the U.S. troops, and what do you think was going to happen? What do you think was going to happen? Exactly what did happen, which is Saddam Hussein's loyalists, the Republican Guard, created new offshoots, who are now known as, first they were Al-Qaeda, now they're ISIS. Run by some of the great military strategists of our time, certainly better than our military strategists, where we have no strategists right now. We have yes men looking over their shoulders at contracts and retirement in Jacksonville, by and large, which is not to denigrate the warriors, they're just not unleashed. But the fact of the matter is, anyone could have predicted this would happen, so the community organizer creates a vacuum, the Sunni triangle is now reoccupied, and they create a homeland there. So you say, okay, so the solution is what? Carpet bomb it, kill everyone in it? That you think that would really work? All it's going to do is engender hatred for the next 100 years. You kill the man's wife and his children, what is he going to do? You think they're ever going to stop wanting to get even with you? Never. And so there's the cycle. It's a knee-jerk action. Oh, carpet bomb them, nuke them. It worked with Japan. All right, well, okay, good luck to you if you think it'll work again. With what's going on in the liberal press today? The liberal press today, forget about it. They would like to cut our throats if they could. So, look, I don't have an answer to this horrible nightmare, and that's why I don't want to talk about it. You know, stress is dealing with something that you can't deal with. That's what stress is. You know, no matter how big the problem is, if you can resolve the problem, it's not stressful at the end of the day. But to talk about things like this day in and day out and get nowhere, or to talk about the criminal government that we have and nothing happens to them, they get away with robbing the treasury, blind steering contracts with fake things on global warming that we know is a crock of garbage. Did they have been caught on that? Now with Benghazi, you want me to spend the whole 3 hours on this like I care? What am I supposed to do about it? That Schmendrick, Trey Gowdy already wasted our time last with the hearings. So that's why I'm talking on another topic, which is age and death fixation. And I was talking about, if you missed it, I'm sorry, I can't repeat it. And the energy changes. The third hour is already a different energy. This is a symphony, what I do for you every day. And it has a beginning and a middle and an end. And it goes up and it goes down. And then it goes to some crescendos and it changes. So I don't even know if I'm going to stick to that topic now that I did the bombing in Turkey already. I got depressed. Now think of the loss of life, the people maimed for life, the children scarred for life with the... And you don't understand how a person can think this way, how an animal wouldn't do a thing like this to fellow creatures. And yet we have this radical Islamist scourge, this cancer on the planet that no one seems to be able to stop. What's the solution? I don't have the solution. So that's what we're going to talk about this. Let's go to the callers. Jason, KSFO. Jason, make your point, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, I hope I didn't insult you by saying this, but I see you as an artist, okay? And you're right to have an outlet for all this garbage and to not talk about it. An outlet of jazz, an outlet of art, an outlet of alcohol and drugs, that's that. But to have an outlet for all this crap is the way to go. And to all the kids like you, me, sitting around our apartments waiting for the marching orders to counter these communists and these Islamists, have an outlet. Have a positive outlet and wait for that right leader. And that right leader will come. I'm not trying to convert your audience, but, you know, once in a while I read my old New Testament, and even all the prophets, the Jewish prophets, Jesus, they all said, this happened to me first. They treated me like garbage. They killed me first. So it's going to happen to you. All the good people of this world end up getting snuffed out. But we can't give up.
All right. I can't even comment on that. That's why I've diverted into some other subjects about this issue of mortality. And I've got some callers that I want to get to. Oliver, I want to go to the woman who was calling. She's gone. Okay. Let's go across the country down south. Well, sort of south Texas. KLIF in Texas, in Dallas. Joe, line four. Give me a little something on this subject from you.
Dr. Savage, I'm 35 years old, and I think about my mortality constantly. I probably buried more people younger than me than older due to drug overdoses and suicides and all that. Plus, my father, sitting there watching the news with him one night, talking back and forth. We stopped talking for a second. I turn around, and he's gray and not breathing. They had a massive heart attack in front of me. Luckily, paramedics got there in time, paddled him on our living room floor, got him to the hospital, and he's still alive to this day. That was 5 years ago. But it just makes you think how instant it is, how random it is, and just something I think about every day. I'm recently...
No, I hear it in your voice. I understand it. You're not alone. I guess doing a show like this is somewhat cathartic because you're going to hear a lot of people calling who also are somewhat obsessed with this age of mortality thing, death and dying, or mortality. And I'm going to ask people why they are so, because I don't think it's the norm. I don't think the average person walks around with this gloom over their head like they're going to die any minute. Some people do. You have a reason to do it, which is this trauma of your dad. But you're telling me it existed in you. It was in you before that, right?
Oh, absolutely. When I was a young kid, I used to lay in bed and think about, what is it like when you die? What's it going to be? You know, I would pretend when I was asleep that nothing was around me, nothing. Okay, I'm dead. I mean, what? So I've thought about it forever.
Right, so let's go back there for a minute. Why were you doing that? What do you think motivated that maudlin, very, very depressive thinking? What would have motivated that?
I had some very positive aunts early in my life pass away that I really didn't get to know very well, and it was just something, nothing.
So now you said you buried a lot of people in your life younger than you who were drug addicts. Now, why did you associate with people who use drugs? Why were you drawn into that world?
It was just there. It wasn't that it was just random people. Like, you want to talk about drummers. I lost one of the best drummers I ever thought I knew to a heroin overdose when he was supposedly getting clean. Did it one more time. Bam.
So are you a musician?
I'm not. I have friends that are musicians. I'm a carpenter. so, but I have a wide swath of friends, and it was a lot of the drug use was from the area we grew up in. It was kind of the thing to do. Everybody started with pot and moved on to heroin and did it.
Oh yeah, and now they're selling pot like it's the most delicious, safe thing on earth to the children. The psychopaths in the media are telling children to smoke pot like it's better for them than anything on earth. It's sickening what's going on. All right, thank you for that terrible story. I don't know what else to say. Let's go to KSFO. Tim, line 6, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hey, Michael?
Yes.
Hey, how you doing? I got to thank you. I've never laughed so hard. I'm just cracking up today. You got to tell more stories like this. I listened to you from San Diego. I can't, 15, 20, I can't remember. They don't have it anymore, unfortunately. But I'm up here working in San Francisco. But I'm just sitting here. I can't stop laughing, man. It's really funny.
What did you like, the story about me walking through Sausalito with the ice cream liquors?
Yeah, just all you're trying to make rhyme, or you're rhyming with everything, and just all, everything.
No, I had a good rap going for 2 straight hours, but I just had a plain yogurt with grapes, and I feel like the blood went to my stomach. Now I can't do it anymore. I shouldn't have had any food at all, because now all the blood went out of my brain down to my stomach. All right, thanks for the call. No, I should never eat during a show. You notice that I'm not eating during the show anymore, like Chinese meals and whatnot? Because it sucks the energy out of you. See, the thing is, the show is 12 to 3 on the West Coast, because that's so I could be in drive time on the East Coast, 3 to 6. Okay, but I don't eat lunch anymore. I gag on, like, boxed lunches. The day may come again when I could sit in a restaurant and eat a lunch, but then so what? Who wants to do that? Because at night I could sit in a restaurant and enjoy it anyway. So what's the point of waiting for a day I can actually eat lunch? So I eat a yogurt now and a fruit. Comes to the same end. What's the difference? I had an AT&T guy here today because the fax line was out. I got 12 phone lines coming into the studio. ISDNs and LSMFTs and this and that. Everything was working. Fax machine goes out 10 days ago. Takes 10 days for AT&T to come. Nice Chinese guy, and the guy's thin as a rail. I'm like the guy, I talk to even people, come on, AT&T guy. I'm one of those guys, you have to excuse me, I get into like human conversations with anybody, if I'm interested. But he was rail thin, middle age, maybe a little older, and I was asking him how he stayed so thin in the middle of fixing the phone line. I toward the end now, like I humanized, because I grew up where, like, if workers came to my house... My father was that way with workers because he was a worker, so he always related to workers. He taught me to always have respect for the working man. So I still do to this day. I don't, you know, oh, working man. Or so. Guy comes to the house. So I said to him this and that. I said, how do you stay so thin? Are you on a special food? He said, no, I eat a lot. I said, you one of those guys that burns it off? Yes. I mean, that's the way it is. Some people have a metabolism. I used to be that way. Whatever I ate, I wouldn't put on a pound. Then I became 15, and that was the end of it. And it was all downhill from that point on. I have a high metabolism, but at a certain point, even your metabolism changes. So let's go back to this, the news, to this, to that. Terrible news out there, honestly. It is awful. Now, I'm going to think about this with you for a minute or two on the radio, because I started talking about a disc jockey. This is how I got distracted, named Symphony Sid. And I looked up his bio while on the air, and he died at 73. And I said, oh, I hope, you know, what did he die from? I wonder if that didn't... Okay, so he was a heavy smoker. He had emphysema and a heart attack. So that made sense. I'm not saying I celebrated it, but it made sense that he died in his 70s from being a heavy smoker and emphysema. I had figured, you know, because you want to believe that if you're leading a clean lifestyle. Look, I lead a life largely of self-denial and clean living. Largely, not entirely. I'm into self-denial and clean living. I'm not saying that I'm perfect, but that's basically the norm of my life, self-denial and clean living. So you figure there'd be some reward for it, like suffering an extra 20 years, right? I mean, you think fate would give you something for all self-denial, like you're going to have another 20 years of suffering. Well, you know, at least I got something out of the deal, right? So you don't want to think all the self-denial and clean living was for nothing. I should get at least another 20 years of suffering out of it. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth and financial future. Call 1-800-289-2646. It's like Love Lost, you know what I mean? It's like a Love Lost song. Too sad, maudlin, lost love. Guy goes into a tailspin, never comes back from it. Has one lose a job after another, always thinking about the perfect girl. She never was right anyway. But then you start to magnify how it was and what could have been. And it wasn't anyway. It was never meant to be. What was meant to be is what you have. Even if it's nothing, that's what was meant to be. So what am I going to say to you? Here's another story. Here's the New York Post today. How I fell in love with my sex doll. Could you... How I fell in love with my sex doll. It's a New York Post story. Can you imagine we're living in a time of human history after all of the wars and plagues and pogroms and deprivation, after all of this struggle for success and life to live itself, we have a whole generation falling in love with sex dolls. That's what it's come down to. So percentage of the population now is buying a sex doll and living with a doll in a closet. Then another one, here's a one, a guy, Seiji Nakajima takes a walk with his love doll, Saori. Even in Japan, no wonder they have, and they have no immigrants over there. At least we have immigrants who still have a normal life. They get a wife and children. No wonder they're bringing in immigrants. At least they don't live with a sex doll. I mean, let's look at it that way. If a society is going insane and not reproducing, and you're one of the overlords, you figure at least we'll get a population that's going to have six children. So they figure to bring them in from wherever they have six children. The guy's not living with a sex doll. That's what they're thinking. So I'm starting to think maybe it's rational. I'm starting to think maybe there's some rational thinking behind it. You know, if the population is so narcissistic and hedonistic that it won't marry and it won't stay with the wife and it won't have children, they bring in people from anywhere who will. Then they give them the mumbo-jumbo in a church, and they tell them that if they keep giving themselves self-denial and clean living, they get rewarded, not in this world, but the next world. Just suffer through those six children, suffer through a rotten job, suffer through a sexless life, because in the next world you're going to be rewarded. And that's the important thing. Mumbo-jumbo, leave money in the dish, that's all. And that goes on for 1,000 years. It doesn't end. So now Seiji Nakajima goes out with his love doll, Saori. He doesn't buy the mumbo anymore. Here he is sleeping. I can't believe it. A Japanese man fell in love with his sex doll but swears he's no dummy. They show the guy sleeping in a bed with it. He says he got so fed up with complicated human relationships that he coupled off with a life-size rubber doll to avoid heartache. She never betrays, Nakajima said. I'm tired of modern rational humans. They are heartless. The married father of two bathes the doll, who is named Saori, takes her shopping and sleeps next to her every night. My day, a bug house. Now it's in a newspaper story. A normie pushes her in a cart in the street. In my day, they put him in a madhouse. There was no medication. They put him in a ward, Creedmoor, Queens, red brick building, bars, Lifetime. If he acts up and starts screaming for the doll, they put him in a straitjacket. Now he's on Good Morning America. It is a crazy world. I mean, from guys living with sex dolls in Japan thinking they're better than humans to Democrats who are no better, basically, than, well, I can't even finish the sentence. Here's a scientist who's been pushing the global warming lie for years, Michael Mann. He now comes out saying, listen to this, I swear to God, data is increasingly unnecessary, he says, because we can see climate change, so we don't need any more data. This is a climate scientist, Michael Mann, who's been pushing the lie of global warming for years, making, his career out of it. He told Democrats at a hearing today that data and models are unnecessary because we can see climate change with our own eyes. Do you have any idea what this is like, living through this as a trained scientist? He says the statistics are unnecessary, and that is because the statistics do not support his theory of global warming. So therefore, we don't need any data, no metrics, nothing. Whatever he feels is true. This is how far we have fallen. New York Senate passes anti-hate speech bill for universities. Gee, I wonder who that's going to be targeted at. Do you think it will apply to Black Lives Matter? New York State Senate has passed a bill which will prohibit universities from providing funding to student groups that encourage hate speech. Would that include groups like Black Lives Matter or other groups that spew hatred on a daily basis? I doubt it. I think it's meant to quiet a certain particular demographic. This is what's going on now. 1 week after Orlando, the Democrats feature an anti-gay imam at a banquet. This is hard to believe. Florida is now inviting enemies of the gay community to speak at their functions, and only 1 week following one of the worst episodes of violence against gays in America. Anti-gay imam Maulana Shafiad Muhammad was allowed to speak at the Leadership Blue Gale, the annual banquet of the Florida Democrat Party. Now, why would the gay people be so gullible and so naive as to invite a radical Islamist there? Why? Can anyone figure this out? Why is there no ability to distinguish between survival and no survival? I don't have an answer to that, and don't call me on it. I'd rather talk about this age and death fixation, which we've been hung up on now for 3 hours. And I think it's a great topic, and I'm going to take some calls on it. Let's go across the country and across the land for some answers here. WDRC Bill, fire away. Let's make it a minute or less, Bill. You have an age and death fixation since when?
Since I was about 6 years old. I used to, and I think I owe it probably all to my grandmother, who always talked about death. She was a very devout Catholic and wanted to die, so I guess that's what probably caused it.
She wanted to die?
She wanted to die. Her husband had died at an early age, and she was left with four daughters. One of them died in practically infancy of a disease, who knows what, in the 1920s. And after that, she had no reason to want to live anymore. She certainly didn't want to get married again. A very devout Roman Catholic, and she went to the Catholic Church for help.
And what were her beliefs as a devout Roman Catholic of that era? Did she believe that when she died, she would meet her husband again?
I believe so. I mean, it's hard for me to think back because it was so long ago. But she believed in heaven and hell, and she believed that there was a place in heaven for her. And she tried to live the good life type of thing. When she went to the church for help because she was, destitute in effect, they sent suitors from Italy who wanted as the potential marrying type. She had four daughters, and she said, "I'm not going to bring another man in the house." So that's what the,
My mother, God rest her soul, my father died in 1970. She never remarried. She never went out on a date. She was still a youngish woman. She was in good. She never wanted a date again. Never. And they didn't have what I would call a everyday loving relationship. It was quite, old world yelling and screaming. But when he died, that was it for her. They tried to get her to date some guy, and she didn't. My aunt dated him and married him. Would you believe that?
Yeah.
My mother didn't want no interest in another man. And she would say things that were quite straight up as to why she didn't want a man around her either. She's pretty clear as to why she didn't want him around. She was very independent. She lived another 20 years without. You need a man in her life. She did very well without one. That's all. Somehow it didn't affect her that she needed, till death do. All right. I don't know an answer to that. I'm interested in stories, by the way, of, let's say there's a couple that's together a long time, and one of them dies. The other dies like in a day or two. Those stories amaze me. And the other one wasn't even sick. And they die. I don't mean kill themselves. They die. There's like a self-will death because they can't live without that other person. They become so wed to one another. Those are true Romeo and Juliet stories. Those are truly romantic stories. And again, the computer, you've got me. No, I'm serious. I don't see those kind of love affairs anymore in the world. Now it's a guy in Japan with a rubber doll for a wife. What happens if the rubber deteriorates? He's going to commit suicide? I don't understand that. The world's getting crazier today. It's actually a pleasure to get older and see a world that's crazier by the second. Crazier by the second. It's a pleasure. It's more entertaining than a movie. Real life is more entertaining than a movie when you see how mad the world is becoming. There's no movie, there's no artist that could create anything as interesting as the world itself if you really look at how sick it really is. I mean, if you like bizarre sick, I always like freak shows, for example. As a child, I would go to a circus. I would always ask to be taken to the freak show in the back. I'm not denigrating people who are born odd, but it was called a freak show then. I didn't name it that. I give different types, the microcephalic, the pinheads. Do I have to make a bad joke about it? You know where they are today. The microcephalics, the macrocephalics, the giant, the midget, the one-breasted man. I know, it was crazy. But children like odd things. You don't have to hide them from a child. And there's a pathos to the odd people, which is that, here's the thing, is they closed that down in Ringling Brothers because it was considered a violation of the human rights of the freaks, if you want to call it that way. But then you ask the people who were born that way what they wanted, they would rather be in the show. Because they had their own little group, their own world, they traveled together, they understood each other. Now they're all alone sitting in some nursing home somewhere provided by the government, and they're dying of loneliness. So, the best of intentions and all of that. But I was always drawn to the odd. Then the world became so boring to me. But now the whole world's a freak show. When you look at Nancy Pelosi, and you listen to her rambling on about global warming, while sniveling, or you listen to Obama talking about LGBT rights while bombs are going off around the world, or you listen to Hillary talk about human rights, you know, while Benghazi. This is better than the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Freak Show. It's truly an amazing thing if you watch it for the, from the point of view of enjoying liars and brigands getting away with murder, literally, and having people believe them. This is more entertaining than watching tourists lick ice cream cones in Sausalito on a hot, boring day in San Francisco area, in the San Francisco area. So here's another story now. I am one story after the other. Unbelievable. Matt Lauer buys Richard Gere's Hamptons home. Like, I care. I care what home Matt Lauer is in, you hear? And what am I supposed to imagine? He does something different than I do. I love these newspapers, these tabloids like the Post. Every day it's about a star's house or a star's party. You don't have the house, you don't have the party. But you're supposed to believe if you had that house, you'd be happier. Or if you had his life, you'd be happier. Then how come they're always in rehab? If they're having such a wonderful time, why are they all drug addicts and in rehab, I ask myself. Well, what kind of great time are they having in the Hamptons or in Beverly Hills? And every other day they're in a drunk tank or in a drug tank. What kind of life are they having? This is nonsense. It's all dancing with the carrot in front of your head to make you run after the carrot. Here's a story. Look at this stupid story in the New York Post. Ray Romano, star of the beloved sitcom Everybody Loves Raymond, has sold a modest home in Woodland Hills for just over $1 million. Now, why is that a story? A million-dollar house where I live is a small... you can't even buy the land for that on less than an eighth of an acre. The 2,700-square-foot single house was... single-story was built... located in the gated community of Penfield Estates. The four-bedroom, three-bathroom home features an open floor plan with vaulted ceilings and a chef's kitchen. I love it. Chef's, what's a chef's kitchen? What does that mean? What in the hell is a chef's kitchen? What does that mean? They bought a Wolf stove? And I bet it has a stainless refrigerator. I will bet that he drinks wine at night. I bet he has a glass of Chardonnay, too. Fire. The outside, there's a pool, waterfall, spa, fire pit, barbecue area, and covered patio that leads to the master suite. Now, why in the world is this a newspaper story? What, is he broke and he has to sell even $1 million property? I mean, he was in TV years ago. Now what? What is he doing now? He co-starred HBO's Vinyl. I love that show. I thought it was Ray Romano. He was terrific in it, by the way, but then they put it out. $100 million, by the way, HBO spent for that show, Vinyl. Did you know that on HBO? I thought it was a great series. I particularly like Mick Jagger's son. I don't know his name. I don't know. James Jagger. I thought he was excellent as one of the rock musicians in New York. There's a great acting in that thing. And then the guy who played the record company owner was good. I don't know his name. He's in a lot of stuff. But Ray Romano was terrific as one of the record producers. But I don't know. They make any money with that. It was $100 million they sank into this series because Martin Scorsese put his name on it. I don't know what they pay the actors. Maybe, you know, Scorsese took the lion's share. But it's not even going to have a season two. They blew through it in 1 year, $100 million on one series? Wow. But don't say anything about loving America because you won't get an HBO. A lot of people say to me, Savage, you're so great. You're so terrific. Why don't you go into stand-up? Why would I go into stand-up when I have a radio show that reaches millions of people every day? Why would I want to go to a little nightclub somewhere and try to entertain a bunch of drunks? I wouldn't. And I don't even understand the pay metrics of stand-up comedy. I don't quite understand how they make a living at it. Where's the money in being a stand-up comic? What do they wind up doing as a result of it? I don't quite get it. And secondly, if you're a comic or a satirist, if you want to put it that way, and you lean to the right, you're never going to get a television show. Because if there was any fairness at HBO or Showtime, I would have had a show 15 years ago. They wouldn't touch me with a 55-foot pole. If you hate America, yes. If you put down normal sexuality, you go right to the head of the class at HBO. If you specialize in glorifying perversity, right to the head of the class. If you sneer at the church, you get your HBO show. If you put down Orthodox Jews, right to the head of the HBO show line. You put down the Catholic Church, you get a double. You put down America, you get a triple. You do an anti-Trump rant, right to the top of the class, you get a right away, you got an HBO special. I don't know how much money they can print for you. So, you tell me. The world is so twisted because of the vermin in the media. These twisted animals in Hollywood have destroyed the world. See, this is the real problem. I can get very vitriolic right now. I don't care about the HBO special. I don't need it. Be more money in the bank. What am I going to do with it? Give it away for elephants again? Help people here and there? That's not what I'm saying. The reason this country is destroyed is because the mind of the West was perverted and destroyed by Hollywood. They destroyed everything. They own every image that comes out of the Hollywood image factories is controlled by a few deviants. I can name them. I can literally name them. I can tell you where they live and who they are and how sick they are. They hate the very country that gave them all of this success. They hate the very nation that protected their ancestors and let them come here. They have a visceral hatred for normalcy. They spit on the flag. They laugh at the people who go in the military. They spit at the police behind their backs. And they've been rewarded like kings of the past in ways you could never imagine. They would never let a patriot near that camera. They would never let a patriot near that microphone. And it is a miracle of God himself that I, Michael Savage, have survived all these years, 22 years, with my political orientation in the major media. And make no mistake about it, this is not a marginal show. This is a major, major radio show heard in the biggest cities in the country, on the biggest stations, in the best time slot. I'm not in the middle of the night somewhere in Nowhereville. It's a miracle that I'm on the radio. And it's because somebody up there wants me on the radio. I wouldn't be here one day. You know how the man said that everything in a life is sort of symbolically miraculous? It's true. Everything is symbolically miraculous, and things happen for a reason. And if the day comes that they don't want me on the radio, I'll be off the radio. It'll be that simple. I will have fulfilled my mission, and I'll be gone. It's that simple, because it's not up to me anymore. It's out of my hands. All I can say to you is this. And this is an appeal to you right now. If you've not yet texted my name, Savage, S-A-V-A-G-E, to 36500 to nominate me for the Radio Hall of Fame, I'm asking you to do so today, and I'll tell you why. If I am nominated for that award, I will tell you what will happen. It will be very, very difficult for people in the radio industry who are right now conspiring to remove me from the airwaves to continue with their dire plans because they hate my politics. Did I make myself clear? I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-CON. It is only a couple of minutes left to the show. I'm telling you the truth, 3 hours flew by. Because I got off the news, by and large. I read you the breaking news, but I wasn't going to get trapped in it. You could get it any way you want, you know. And I figured I would rather talk about, you know, Symphony Sid and jazz music and great people in radio and how it's influenced me and how, I guess, the tempo of music itself, jazz music in particular, lifted me up from the humdrum life that I was living in as a kid. It was very boring, very static. And there was the truth. One day I'll do a whole show on how certain books did it to me as well. I can name them right now. You want to talk about books that equal Charlie Parker, they would have to be Jack Kerouac's On the Road, Dharma Bums. These books influenced me greatly and put me on my road. And, you know, one day I'll talk about Kerouac, what an influence he was in my life, and how he is his life was distorted and is distorted by the leftists in the universities, making him into something he never was. He was never a leftist. In fact, he voted for Nixon. He was a deep patriot, former football player. His life was twisted by the demon Allen Ginsberg, who tried to, or did, have sex with him while he was drunk or stoned one day. And he hated him for it. He called him a commie pervert. So the fact of the matter is, the universities extolled Kerouac for all the wrong reasons. I revered him for all the right reasons, because of the spirit of adventure, the spirit of quest, the spirit of marching into the unknown. And of course, there was a similarity in how the death of his brother affected him his whole life and gave him this sense of, you know, loss, longing, and mine. It's a very similar thing. He revered his brother and thought he was a saint, just as I do mine, as I write about in Travels with Teddy. I mean, whatever I call it, I don't know, Teddy and me. Anyway, what a great day. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with God's will and your listenership.